Yes, imagine this. There's a picture that you love. Suppose it's, I don't know, a Picasso or a Sidney Nolan. You just love it. And then one day, an expert tells you that it's a copy, it's a fake. How do you react? Or more specifically, what happens to the wiring inside your brain? Martin Kemp is Professor Emeritus at Oxford University, a professor in art history. He's also a leading expert on the Italian Renaissance, particularly the work of Leonardo da Vinci. Telling authentic works from copies is his bread and butter. And now he's got together with a couple of neuroscientists to explore this fascinating question about how our brains respond to fakes and how they respond to the genuine article. Martin, welcome to Books and Arts Daily.
Michael, pleasure to be there. I should say it's Australia Day. It's also Burns Night. My family are Scottish, so there we are.
Is that right? So you're I didn't know that. Well, are you going to recite some Robbie Burns for us?
Not with the right accent. No, I was born in England, which is fairly shameful, but there we are.
No, we'll get over it. I can forgive you that, Martin. Now, look, you're an expertise. You've got expertise in copies and forgeries and fakes. That's what you do. What was it you wanted to understand when you got involved in this experiment?
Well, it wasn't really about telling whether something was authentic or not. That's another question for another day. It was how people look at basically the same thing if they think it's the real deal or if it's a copy or a version or a fake. And having taught art history and having been involved in the art world for a long time, I knew subjectively that if we think something isn't right, as they say in the art trade, then we began to notice what's wrong with it. And I performed the exercise with students with a perfectly good drawing and proved to them it was a fake. And they all said, oh yes, we can see that now. So I thought it'd be interesting to test the way that happened and see, you know, if there's any discernible thing happening in the brain when we're presented with, and we used Rembrandts and non-Rembrandts, well, it works as authentic and not authentic, but, and we scrambled them up so people didn't know whether they're looking at the real thing or not.
Let's take this, let's explain this carefully, Martin. So you've got 14 people who are your subjects, aged between 20 and 27. You strap them into a machine, a brain scanning machine, basically.
Yeah, which isn't very comfortable. So,
and I guess they can see a screen, can they? A video screen, a television screen.
Yeah, they it's hardly as seen in an art gallery, but we provided them with a brief saying you're going to be looking at works by Rembrandt and not Rembrandt, and a little account of who Rembrandt was and that there were lots of works that looked like him, produced by followers, etc. And we would tell them which was which, and of course we lied.
So I'm lying there in the machine. I know that Rembrandt is a great Dutch painter of the 17th century. I care enough about art to have a response. And you show me one Rembrandt portrait after another, and a voice says, this is original, this is a fake, this is a fake.
Yeah, it said it's a non-Rembrandt.
Non-Rembrandt. Rembrandt, non-Rembrandt. And you've got wires going essentially into my brain to work out how I respond when I believe that one picture is a
brain. We've not got wires going into it.
Well, there's a scanner. Yes, a scanner's looking at my brain, looking at brain activity. Okay, what did we discover?
What we discover is that if you think you're looking at the real thing, that the areas of the brain associated with pleasure and reward kick in a relatively straightforward way, and we begin to enjoy what we're looking at and we're comfortable with it. If we're told it's not right, other areas of the brain kick in, particularly areas concerned with problem solving and dealing with difficult things on a kind of multiple basis. So there's a lot more anxiety and a lot less relaxing into simply looking at the work and enjoying it. That's a sort of slightly disturbed pattern going on.
The paper is very technical. I mean, if you're not a neuroscientist, and I'm not a neuroscientist, I did find about three quarters of it impossible to understand. But the finding which did fascinate me is this thing that you're discussing now, that your people, when they're told an image was a fake, they would try to understand what it was about the painting that let the experts know that. It's as if you can see that they're trying to learn what it is that constitutes a Rembrandt fake.
Yeah, there's a sense that if you're told something is a fake, you begin to notice other things about it, which may be real observations or maybe a bit imaginary, but you begin to think, well, perhaps the nose isn't quite in the right place, or the things don't look quite as good as they should be, and so on. And what we were looking at, and what I'm interested in, is how complicated looking at a work of art is. We don't just go to it without expectations. We don't turn up with a blank canvas, as it were, in our minds, that what we look at is hugely influenced by expectation, by what it's labelled as.
Yes, indeed. I mean, it reminds me of a report that got a lot of, or an experiment that got a lot of coverage about, in 2008. A scientist at the California Institute of Technology did a similar experiment, which showed that people enjoyed wine more if they were told it cost $90 a bottle than if they were told it cost $20 a bottle. Same wine.
It's very much the same kind of thing. It indicates how malleable our responses are. It doesn't mean to say that it's all totally arbitrary and there's no kind of core response which we can work on, but it does show how plastic and malleable our views are. As an art history educator, of course, part of this is good news, because it means that the way people look at things can be steered, and of course as an educator you want to steer it in a responsible way rather than mislead them, as we did for the sake of the experiment.
Let's push a bit deeper and find out what this tells us, because one reading, I suppose, would be to say, oh, this must mean that we're somehow hardwired in our brains to respond differently to the information that this is a fake work to the information that this is a genuine work. But I'm assuming that's not a conclusion that you would draw.
No. What this shows in terms of the detail of the study, if you extrapolate it on wider, is that looking at a work of art is not just a question of saying, oh, well, we can tell the visual cortex is working away at looking at this thing, but that all these other areas of the brain, perhaps operating at much lower levels of activity, are all steering the ship, as it were, in various ways. So it's an attempt with neuroscience, which often deals with why we find something beautiful, etc., to get at the kind of messiness and complexity of viewing works of art. And this is just a first step down that road.
I suppose what I'm feeling for is that as I read the experiment, I wouldn't be inclined to conclude that it's the way the brain is structured that shapes the way we respond to things. I would assume that the way in which we're programmed by our culture to value an authentic work of art over a fake is what's determining the pleasure response as opposed to the confusion or disturbed response. And that what you're seeing in the chemistry of the brain is how the chemistry of the brain deals with those two emotional states.
That is absolutely right. It's showing that in an area looking at works of art, that we're not just dealing with some sort of abstract process that is always the same, but that what we think we're looking at, and indeed I suspect the circumstances, if we're in an art gallery or whatever, that all these things do have a rather profound effect upon which bits of the brain are put into action and how they steer the process of seeing. Seeing is a very selective process, and it's hugely steered by a whole series of factors, some of which we don't have any conscious control over.
This is, what's the show called? It's called Books and Arts Daily, and I'm Michael Cathcart, still learning the ropes here on RN, and I'm talking to art historian Martin Kemp, who's been involved in an experiment where they've put people, ordinary people like you or me, into a brain scanner and then told these people that a particular picture was a Rembrandt and the next picture was actually a fake, and measured the response in their brain to this information, regardless of whether the picture actually was or was not a fake. And Martin, it reminded me actually of the American philosopher William James, and this is going, way back, who was terribly interested in the ways in which religious experience or spiritual experience might be reflected in the electrochemistry of the brain. This is not a new area of investigation, is it?
it's not new what we're now doing with modern neuroscience, and I'm an art historian, not the the gatekeeper for the science as such, is that we're developing very sophisticated and increasingly sensitive ways of finding how the brain works, not just that some area lights up and becomes very hot and a lot of activity going on, but the complex psychological reactions that that go on in any act of seeing. And it's obviously not just works of art, but initially I found neuroscience and art not all that satisfying, because it seemed to just deal with big, rather open questions, which is not what the historian does. You know, I'm interested in how the looking at art actually works in a historical and contemporary context.
I'm glad you said that, because there is a kind of so what factor in all of this. Okay, so this part of my brain lights up when I'm happy, and that part of my brain lights up when I'm a bit puzzled. But in the end, the cultural pressures that are driving us to think this way or that don't seem to me to be solved in a brain scanning machine, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, what